Hi, this is Mike Warner from Work Hard, Playlist Hard. You're listening to Your Morning Coffee, the podcast with my friends Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart. Weekly music news for the new music business.
From Glenn Peoples at Billboard, is UMG's TikTok ban hurting its U.S. streaming numbers? Here's what the evidence shows.
From Blake Morgan, an independent musician's perspective on the TikTok legislation before Congress.
And from Jesse Kirschbaum, Beats and Bytes, Q1 2024 Music Trend Report. Mm. Oh my goodness, we've got so much to talk about today. Jay and I are really glad you're here, and we are going to push the go button right about now.
Stand by for transmission.
This is London calling.
Wake up!
Your morning coffee is on the air.
Standing by. Your morning coffee, the weekly music news for the new music business. It's the highly curated, agitated, advocated, moderated, and liberated digital music information that you need to know. We are your digital music authority. And now, from our studios in Hollywood, California, here's your hosts, Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart.
Well, Jay, it is very good to see you on a very chilly Saturday morning here in SoCal.
Sunny and cool.
Sunny and cool, indeed. But you and I, as per usual, have been conversing for the last 1 hour and 5 minutes, just catching up, you know, with the weeks and going over stuff that has some things to do with what we're going to talk about, some things that don't. But it's the highlight of my weekend.
Mine, sure, too. So much going on. A couple of things in the newsletter this week. One, Symphonic had a story, 10 South by Southwest panels you can listen to right now. And my panel is in there in case you're curious. The one, the evolving landscape of record labels for artists. That's that panel I did with Taylor Hansen, Nick Lipman, and Sherry Saidi. So thank you so much, Symphonic. But there were some panels that I missed because I was doing a couple of panels, and now I can go in there and listen to them. So look in your morning coffee, 10 South by Southwest panels you can listen to right now.
Well, I love that because I haven't been to South by for a few years, but it's so packed. It's really hard to and even if you're there's so many things going on, it's really hard to catch everything. So I love that.
I do too. I was hoping they would do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jay, you are going to be at Ohio State Music Industry Summit this week. You got to love that. Registration is still open. You can join them on April 9th and 10th. It's free and open to all. And you can jump over to ohio.edu/music-industry-summit. I think I might even put that in the show notes, Jay.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. The keynote is by Jason Isbell, and I'm really looking forward to collaborating with.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be great. The other thing this week that a lot of people were talking about, there was this open letter, and I'm sure you saw it.
I did.
There was an article that Jem Oswald wrote for Variety, and the headline was, "Billie Eilish, Nicki Minaj, Stevie Wonder, dozens more call on AI developers to respect artist rights." And there was a lot of conversation this week about that open letter.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Billie Eilish, Nicki Minaj, Stevie Wonder, Pearl Jam, Casey Musgraves, Camila Cabello, and more than 200 other artists have joined with the Artist Rights Alliance nonprofit, that's an artist-led education and advocacy organization, to issue an open letter supported by more than 200 artists calling on AI developers, technology companies, platforms, and digital music services to cease the use of artificial intelligence, that's AI, of course, to infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists. A full list of signatories appears in the article.
Yeah, while AI-related threats like deepfakes, voice cloning, you know, they continue to attract significant and legal scrutiny, the letter also highlights two related trends. The use of musical works by AI developers without permission to train and produce AI copycats, and the use of AI sound, in quotation marks, to dilute royalty obligations.
Right. So the text of the letter follows in full. It starts with, "We, the undersigned members of the artist and songwriting communities, call on AI developers, technology companies, platforms, and digital music services to cease the use of artificial intelligence to infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists."
Right. It goes on to say, "Make no mistake, we believe that when used responsibly, AI has enormous potential to advance human creativity in a manner that enables the development and growth of new and exciting experiences for fans everywhere. Unfortunately, some platforms and developers are employing AI to sabotage creativity and undermine artists, songwriters, musicians, and rights holders."
Right. So it says, "When used irresponsibly, AI poses enormous threats to our ability to protect our privacy, our identities, our music, and our livelihoods. Some of the biggest and most powerful companies are, without permission, using our work to train AI models. These efforts are directly aimed at replacing the work of human artists with massive quantities of AI-created sounds and images that substantially dilute the royalty pools that are paid out to artists. For many working musicians, artists, and songwriters who are just trying to make ends meet, this would be catastrophic."
Right. "Unchecked, AI will set in motion a race to the bottom that will degrade the value of our work and prevent us from being fairly compensated for it. The assault on human creativity must be stopped. We must protect against the predatory use of AI to steal professional artists' voices and likenesses, violate creators' rights, and destroy the music ecosystem."
All right. So the letter ends saying, "We call on all AI developers, technology companies, platforms, and digital music services to pledge that they will not develop or deploy AI music generation technology, content, or tools that undermine or replace the human artistry of songwriters and artists, or deny us fair compensation for our work."
Wow. Right. Right. And so this week, I talked with Jen Jacobson. She's the executive director of the Artist Rights Alliance, ARA. Let's listen into that discussion. Jen, good to see you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. It's great to be here. Appreciate it.
For our audience who doesn't know, tell us about the Artist Rights Alliance.
Yes. So the Artist Rights Alliance, which I joined fairly recently, I'm the executive director, was founded... Well, it's had different iterations of itself, but it's existed for maybe a decade or so in various forms. And it was founded by musicians. It's an artist-run nonprofit that advocates for artist rights and for fairness in the digital marketplace for everyone who creates music. And really, our mission is to make sure that artists have a voice in things that impact them. So their music, their livelihood. And all issues that impact the creator's world.
Fantastic. So the Artist Rights Alliance just issued an open letter, and it's supported by more than 200 artists, and it's calling on AI developers, technology companies, platforms, digital music services, to cease the use of AI, artificial intelligence, to infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists. And this is a hot topic lately. So one of the main goals is to prevent the unethical use of generative AI to replace human artists and devalue their entire music ecosystem. Tell us a bit about that and about your work.
Great. Yes. Well, AI, of course, has been front and center for singers and songwriters, for all artists, really, and for all of us as humans, because this is a rapidly evolving technology and we don't know where it's going. But in the music world, I do want to start by saying that AI has brought some wonderful opportunities for musicians in the creative process. Musicians use AI tools all the time for writing, for to help in the studio and for production, and tons of things, tons of ways that the technology can be used. But when it is used unethically, there is a potential to cause serious harm to artists. It's already happening, even to replace artists, and we can't let that happen. And that's what the letter is about. So the letter started with ARA, that's the Artist Rights Alliance, ARA members talking with other artists and drafting this this message to our technology partners and digital services and online platforms. And then the letter started circulating and it really took off, circulating around the artist community. It took off because it really resonates with music creators. And so it became, it became a real viral kind of thing, which was not a surprise, but it was great to see.
Yeah, I saw it everywhere. So where can I get involved? Where can people get involved and learn more about what you're doing and help you with your cause?
That's great of you to ask. So artistrightsalliance.org is our website. We have a lot of this up there. We have a campaign. We have the ability for you to sign on to future letters that we're doing. And we really want to educate folks about what's happening in the AI space and allow them to kind of keep track, to the extent that any of us can keep track. You'll notice that the letter has everything from big names to names you might not have heard of. And that's because it really resonates with people all across the artist community, which is interesting. And that's because there's lots of different kinds of harms that we see here. There is the harm of your music being stolen to train the AI models, right, without your permission, and you don't get paid for it. That's one thing. There's the harm that people have heard about a lot of an artist's voice being cloned and replicated, all these deep fake issues that we've seen. But I would say, interestingly, this letter, it touches on those things, which are critical things, but it even goes to a larger point, which is that AI used in the wrong way will literally devalue the entire music marketplace. It will change the way we listen to music, the way we are able to access artists that we want to find and be introduced to new music, and really has the potential to replace human artistry. So that's the overall concern, the overarching concern here.
Well, keep up the great work. We'll be cheering you on from the sidelines and hope to speak again. Thank you so much, Jen.
Oh, thank you, Jay. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah, wow. This is going to be, as we've said, we've been talking about this a lot. This will continue to be kind of top of mind conversations as we move forward throughout the year and years to come. It's the technology is amazing, but boy, the repercussions that from it are also substantial.
Absolutely. And another thing this week that was really interesting was, you saw that post by Rob Abelow, right?
I did, yes.
He's the author of one of our favorite blog newsletter. It's called Where Music's Going. He was responding to a post that stated Tidal and Apple Music pay more than Spotify. And it really caused a lot of folks to get fired up.
Yes, it did. So here's Rob's post. It's titled Tidal and Apple Music Pay More Than Spotify with a question mark. No, you're just confused. What you think is a dunk on Spotify is actually a flex for them. These platforms all have the same basic payout setup. It's just that Spotify listeners are so much more engaged that it drives the per stream rate down. This is mostly a good thing, Rob says. They all do about 70% of subscription revenue split pro rata with all songs, and they are all essentially have the same subscription fees at about $10.99 a month in the U.S.
Yeah, the main factors that affect payout differences, according to Rob, number one, where you listen. A subscriber in India pays less than an American one, so a U.S. stream pays more than one in India. Spotify is growing far faster than global competitors in emerging markets, which tends to bring down the per-stream rate.
Indeed. So number two is what plan you have. Spotify allows free users, plus has bundles like Duo and Family, which really bring down the family stream rate. Apple is premium only, but also have bundles. They all do. But Rob, even Spotify premium in the U.S. is lower than Apple. What's going on? This is where number three comes in.
Yeah, number three, how much people stream. Platforms don't decide per stream rates. They simply pay it out pro rata. Since they all have the same basic fees and structure, the level of engagement significantly affects the rate. Spotify listeners stream far more than other platforms. This brings the per stream rate down. It's a flex, not a knock.
And listen, I get it. The system is widely broken and feels unfair, but it's important to actually understand what you're talking about when pushing for change or improvement. The main culprit here is pro rata. We should be using fan-centric. We should have higher subscription fees. We should connect artists more directly to fans. We should provide more ways for artists to monetize.
Amen, brother. He goes on to say, because here's the thing. This passive consumption game only works at scale. We need to focus on new models that increase fandom, connection, and music's value. We need to value artists, not just content. Rob says he'll go deeper on streaming's future, value, and more in this week's post on Where Music's Going. I highly encourage you to check out wheremusicsgoing.com. Always great stuff from Rob. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, again, so many of these things can be counterintuitive. And sometimes you got to really kind of peel back the onion a little bit and see kind of how things influence other things. And it's nice to kind of have a perspective like this, because, again, at first blush, you're thinking, yeah, this, that, or the other. And then when you kind of examine it a little more closely, you were a little bit mistaken in your rush to judgment.
Right, exactly. And you and I talked about this last week with that Bob Lefsetz post. And then some of the, you know, as a rebuttal to sort of the slam on streaming services. But I love that he's talking about, you know, we talk about pro rata versus fan centric or user centric all the time, and higher subscription fees, and, you know, connecting artists more directly with fans. All of those things, I just think he's spot on.
Absolutely. Jay, before we jump into the stories this week, I do want to talk about a topic that, of course, is near and dear to both of our hearts, and that is music education.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so important, and not just for the music. As you know, as a musician, it also teaches kids spatial skills and social skills and learning how to collaborate. And, you know, it might even help them with other studies like math. And you and I, music education is so near and dear to our hearts. This week, I had a really nice conversation with the chief relationship officer at Music Will. Music Will is the largest nonprofit music program in the U.S. public school system. And I got to speak with Janice Palazzotto. And let's listen into that quick conversation. Janice, you've got a long track record of trying to make this world a better place. Tell me a little bit about what you're building at Music Will.
Well, you know what? It's a really super exciting time, Jay. Not only do we have a new CEO who started in January, but we're about to embark on our next five-year strategic plan that's going to have us really essentially doubling everything, doubling the number of students we serve, doubling the number of teachers that we work with, and doubling our revenue numbers. So it's a high growth period of time for us. And we're really super excited about it. You know, on top of it, we've got our benefit coming up on April 24th at the Novo at LA Live. And we'll be honoring Andra Day and Josh Groban. So lots of cool things happening.
Tell me a little bit about maybe some of your little victories that you've had along the way.
Well, for me personally, I've been at Music Will for almost 7 years. You know, just a couple of years ago, I take great pride in helping to drive our rebrand from Little Kids Rock into Music Will. A huge endeavor. It was something that the organization been trying to do for, I think about 6 or 7 years, but with COVID, there were some starts and stops, and obviously we had to pause. So taking the brand and turning it into Music Will has been a great kind of a momentum, upward momentum element for us. You know, it's a brand that's really resonating with artists, with the industry, with corporate brands, with our donors. And then, you know, I just finished the interim CEO stint, which was another personal victory for me. I was able to do more than keep the lights on. And, you know, we did some great things during that 13 months. And like I said, I'm really, really excited to be working with Mike Wasserman, who's our new CEO. He brings great focus and vision and great experience to the organization. So those are some personal victories. I think for the org, recently, you know, we did a kind of a tour with Tom Morello, where we expanded our program in his name into schools in Los Angeles, in Harlem, and Marseille, Illinois, where that's his childhood, where he's from, and his mom was raised. And then we did the same thing with Babyface and brought the program to his hometown in Indianapolis, which led to a feature on the Kelly Clarkson show. So, you know, some great, really great momentum, some really fun things happening.
Fantastic. You know, my wife is a teacher and has been for over 25 years. So a lot of this is near and dear to my heart. Where can people get involved? Where can people learn more about you and Music Will?
We would love your listeners to come and check us out at musicwill.org. You can see all the great things that we're doing, the artists that we're working with, the impact we're having with kids and with teachers, not just here in Los Angeles, but all around the country.
Keep up the great work, Janice. Thanks for joining us. Let's keep in touch.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jay. Have a great day.
Yeah, I certainly love this. And just, you know, looking at their website and stuff, they have a lot of interesting programs. And, you know, also, you know, we know about traditional music programs in schools, and they're also kind of promoting lots of different kind of programs that also kind of involve recording technology and individual performance stuff as opposed to kind of in a group or an orchestra. Yeah. And big kudos to them. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
And Jay, before we do start going, we got to thank our sponsors, man. Your Morning Coffee Podcast, brought to you by our friends at Bandzoogle. For over 20 years, Bandzoogle has made it easy to build a stunning website and online store for your music. Now they've added a brand new EPK plan that musicians can create a professional single-page electronic press kit in minutes. All the features you need to design an EPK are already built in, including fully customizable templates, preset EPK page layouts, music players, images, text, bio, and video embeds, a gig calendar and press quotes, and access to Bandzoogle's award-winning support team 7 days a week. The new EPK plan starts at just $6.95 per month, and Your Morning Coffee Podcast listeners can jump over to Bandzoogle.com to try it free for 30 days, then use the promo code MorningCoffeeEPK, all one word, to get 10% off the first year of the new EPK plan subscription. That's Bandzoogle.com, promo code MorningCoffeeEPK when you sign up to the EPK plan.
Yeah, and a special thank you to Hypebot. Since 2004, Hypebot has chronicled the new music industry and the trends and technologies that are changing how music is discovered, consumed, marketed, and monetized. It's edited daily by founder Bruce Houghton with help from Alana Bonilla. Hypebot and sister blog Music Think Tank are published by live music discovery and marketing platform Bands in Town.
That's right, Jay. Bands in Town. Over 80 million live music fans trust Bands in Town to get personalized concert alerts, recommendations, and messages from their favorite artists. It's the number one artist service platform, connecting over 590,000 artists with their super fans. Managers, labels, agencies, and artists access their own dashboard to manage and promote their tour dates across all platforms, and Bands in Town is always on my first page on my iPhone.
Yeah, my always. Mine too. And we'd also like to thank the Music Business Association. We've got the Music Biz Conference coming up, and that is really the conference, you know, that's where the rooms in which the important conversations that shape the future of the industry take place. representing more than 90% of the industry at large, the Music Business Association serves as a connective tissue for the global music business and provides a trusted forum where ideas and collaboration can flourish. So join us at the Music Biz 2024 conference coming up here soon, May 13th through the 16th in Nashville. I'll be moderating a panel with some very smart music marketers. I'll see you there.
All right. Big thanks to Banzugo, Hypebot, Bands in Town, and the Music Business Association. And big thanks to my good friend Jay Gilbert, who dragged me into this show. And I
kicking and screaming.
Can't thank you enough. Jay is a music industry consultant. He's the curator of the weekly Your Morning Coffee newsletter and a former executive with Universal Music, Sony Music, and Warner Music Groups, and just a digital music ninja he is.
I'm a ninja. Yes. And I get to do this show every week with my good friend Mike Etchart, longtime host of Sound and Vision Radio, formerly of SST Records, Warner Music, Capital EMI, and Universal Music Group. And that hour we spent before we hit record, we were talking about some stories about some of those years. And we are so fortunate to have worked with some of the people we've worked with and continue to work with. Color me thankful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's jump into the stories, Jay. The first one, it's from Billboard. Is UMG's TikTok ban hurting its U.S. streaming numbers? Here's what the evidence shows.
Yeah. I mean, really, 2 months after pulling its catalog from the platform, there's really no clear indication that the music giant's market share has deviated from normal fluctuations. And we have to say that this piece, I first learned about it through Glenn Peoples' Billboard newsletter, The Ledger. And then I went to Billboard Pro to read the whole thing, and you and I were talking about it.
It's fascinating. And so here are some of the highlights from Glenn's article. There's little doubt that TikTok drives the discovery of new and unfamiliar music. Exactly how much engagement it creates downstream at on-demand music streaming platforms is less clear. It's been roughly 2 months since Universal Music Group announced its decision to remove its catalog from TikTok after the company's licensing agreement ended on January 31st. To see if its absence from TikTok has hurt UMG's streaming numbers, Billboard looked at Luminate's weekly market shares for UMG as well as for Sony Music and Warner Music Group going back to the beginning of 2023.
And so what is the conclusion? Thus far, there's no clear evidence that UMG's U.S. market share has been affected by its catalog removal from the wildly popular platform. Since the week ended February 8th through the week ending March 28th, UMG's market share has not deviated from what could be considered normal trends. Importantly, the company has not suffered a major blow either in market share or chart appearances while absent from TikTok.
Wow. So given the importance of on-demand audio streaming to record labels, a loss in market share would hit UMG in the pocketbook. In 2023, UMG's record labels received about $6.17 billion in royalties from streaming, according to its 2023 annual report. Just a 5% decline in streaming revenue is worth over $300 million annually. TikTok, on the other hand, is a relatively small part of UMG's business. The previous licensing deal with TikTok was worth about 1% of UMG's annual revenue. CFO Boyd Muir stated in the company's February 28th earning call, equal to about $120 million annually based on 2023's total revenue.
Right, but there's evidence that TikTok is less valuable to music discovery than music streaming services that still offer UMG's catalog. TikTok users would potentially discover UMG's music, still have a lot of ways to find new music and new artists in the absence of TikTok, Music Watch managing partner Russ Krupnik tells Billboard via email. Though admittedly, it's an important option. Music Watch has found that TikTok users are three times as likely to cite their favorite streaming service as the top source for music discovery as they are TikTok. And two-thirds of TikTok users say music streaming services are a source for hearing new songs and new artists. 49% of TikTok users cite TikTok as a favorite for finding new music.
Still, an absence from TikTok means UMG's artists aren't reaching young consumers where they spend much of their time. TikTok is an especially popular option for teens, notes media researchers Tatiana Cirasano. A media survey of U.S. consumers found that 24% of all people surveyed listened to songs they first heard on TikTok on a monthly basis. That number jumps to 52% for 16 to 19-year-olds. And 55% of people in that age group say TikTok is one of the top three places where they discover new music. That's ahead of YouTube at 47% and music streaming services at 36%.
For all of TikTok's promotional value and ability to break hits, the app might be more of a silo than people think. Media also found that 76% of consumers who said TikTok is a main source of music discovery don't seek information on an artist after finding a song on the app. In other words, what happens on TikTok often stays on TikTok. Let's see if the impact of UMG's absence from the app will be just as contained. You can read this entire article on Billboard Pro. I thought it was a really fascinating look.
It is. And, you know, you and I were talking earlier before we hit record about how I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that conversation when UMG was deciding to pull everything down. And, you know, what were they looking at? What data? And, you know, when you read this article that Glenn put together, it's, you know, they must have probably were making the decision. Is it going to matter?
Yeah.
And if it's going to matter, how much is it going to matter?
Right.
Yeah.
And I know the team over there, Mike, and I can tell you they're very analytical. And I know for a fact that they looked at the data very, very closely and weighed their pros and cons and all their options. Yeah.
Really interesting. All right. Our second story, Jay, from Blake Morgan, an independent musician's perspective on the TikTok legislation before Congress. There are many loud voices making a lot of noises about TikTok right now. And as someone who makes noise for a living, he said, I thought I'd provide an independent musician's perspective on the TikTok legislation before Congress. He says, I hope it passes both as an American and as a music maker.
Yeah, first of all, this bill restricts TikTok. It does not ban the app, Blake points out. It forces the company to cut its ties with the Chinese Communist Party and prevents them from accessing the data of Americans. That's a good thing. The bill doesn't mandate or regulate speech. It's focused on national security. The threat is no secret. It's real. The Federal Communications Commission, FCC, called TikTok, quote, a clear and present danger, end quote, to our country. It's amusing to recall the extent to which everyone freaked out about a Chinese spy balloon, but apparently a Chinese spy balloon in every phone is okay, isn't it?
It isn't, he says. And Blake goes on to say, second, music makers already know what music lovers are just now learning. TikTok is the worst, most exploitive streaming platform for music anywhere. And he says, and that's saying something. The vast majority of music on TikTok generates virtually no revenue for the musicians who made it. And even more music on the platform is completely unlicensed. In fact, stolen, copied, stolen via AI, or pirated, stolen. Simply put, he says, TikTok is trying to build a music-based business without paying music makers a fair value for the music. That's why Universal Music Group has already pulled out of TikTok. That's why the National Music Publishers Association has already announced it won't renew its license with the company. So TikTok poses a clear and present danger to American music as well.
Right. Musicians and Americans are all too familiar with being underpaid and undervalued, with our data being scraped and sold, and platforms that promote hate speech, bigotry, and bullying. But TikTok does all of this and more while posing as an existential national security threat to our country.
So he says, but why aren't we as worried about the U.S. billionaires who own the other apps stealing our data and trying to manipulate us? Bluntly, because those U.S. billionaires are subject to U.S. laws and the Chinese Communist Party in China isn't. Also, we are worried about it, as we should be, but as bad as those platforms are and can be, TikTok is different.
Right. He goes on to say, TikTok isn't X, formerly Twitter, or Meta. They're they're on an even more dangerous level, which is what's behind the growing international response. Nations across the globe and government bodies like NATO, the European Commission, EU Council, and the European Parliament are taking action against TikTok. The United States is joining an international community with Afghanistan, Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, many, many others, and I'm not going to read off here, but there's a lot, and the United Kingdom in taking action against TikTok.
Right. Again, he says, this isn't a ban and no one is going to lose their TikTok. This is governments around the world saying we need the company's ownership structure to change for defense reasons. It's happened before, by the way, right here in 2020, the Chinese-owned dating app Grindr was sold after the U.S. government expressed similar national security concerns. 4 years later, the app is doing just fine.
Right. He says it's rare to see independent musicians like me stand with major labels and music publishers, and it's rare to see Republicans and Democrats stand together at all, let alone overwhelmingly about anything. And it's rarer still at a time when it's hard to hear anything above all of the noise. But at least for this noisemaker, forcing TikTok to separate from an authoritarian government, bilking musicians and Americans is an idea that's easy to support, especially in an uneasy time.
Yeah, so I hope the bill passes and I hope the president signs it. Well, good comments and good, you know, something to think about. And I keep wondering too, you know, will the other shoe drop with the other major music companies?
Yeah.
How's that going to roll out? It'd be interesting to kind of pay attention in the next few months.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting. And I encourage everybody to check out Blake Morgan, what he's all about, you know, the hashtag I Respect Music, you know, where he's trying to get performers paid in the U.S. When their songs are played on the radio, which they don't currently. And also check out his music. I really like it. It's super melodic.
It's really
great stuff. So thank you, Blake. Keep up the good fight, brother.
Yes, absolutely. And our last story, Jay, it's from Jesse Kirschbaum at Beats and Bytes, the Q1 2024 Music Trend Report. And here are some highlights from Jesse's article. Heading into Q2 is always a good moment for spring cleaning and reflection on what's transpired in the year so far. He says, from my standpoint, the industry is looking solid across the board.
Right. Jesse goes on to say, the primary way I see music changing is through perceived value. During the early 2000s, music was viewed as free by consumers. Now, through private equity, venture capital, and the labels, the streaming companies, and the artists, this has changed. The conversation around music as an undervalued commodity is ramping up, which will lead to a great era of investment in music and even more change and opportunity.
Right. So looking at Q1, here's some of the key topics, what the key topics have been. First of all, is labels cutting costs while creating more profits. It's a good time to be in the major label business. Their focus on boosting their stocks as they look for their next big business models. The labels are letting good people go, unfortunately, while harvesting, monetizing, and reinvesting. He says, I expect that to continue. They will fund the next movements in music by leveraging their war chests and catalogs.
Yeah, the next point he makes is that major streaming services are saturated. That's why Spotify is focused on music videos, audiobooks, and master classes, because truthfully, how many new subscribers are out there?
So Jesse says Apple is having a hard year. Is Apple's reign over? He says, I don't think so, but Q1 has been rough. Apple is having trouble across the board, from regulation to lawsuits in Europe and a lawsuit from the U.S. government. Vision Pro, like many other VR devices, kind of feels like it flopped.
Yeah, he goes on to say everyone is trying to figure out, you know, AR and VR, augmented reality and virtual reality, respectively. I expect more breakout games, accessories, and hardware. It's not about hardware, though. The platform that enables the best developers and builds the best consumer app store is the one that will win biggest.
Right. He says the IPO market, a big question is it really to go again? In Q1, we saw some positive tests. Reddit did well, as did Truth Social, or at least out of the gate. Once the IPO market comes back, we'll start to see a flurry of mergers, exits, and investment money.
Yeah. He says that the algorithm killed the music critic. The music media landscape is changing and, you know, Pitchfork folded. Is there a need for a few new players in the critic space. Does anybody care about a critic when the algorithm can serve up the next track for you, or can it?
Right. He says, build a newsletter, create a fund. Everywhere I turn, people are dropping newsletters and building businesses around their thought leadership. It's all about trusted voices. The Substack revolution has given way to an email newsletter frenzy. Where people go from here will be interesting.
Guilty says, as charged.
That's right. I was just going to say that.
The next one, music, movies on the rise. Music biographies, and we love this stuff so much. Biopics, concert films, they're popping up right and left. Bob Marley's biopic One Love was the biggest film of the year until Dune 2 last week. AMC is having an amazing year with concert films from Beyonce, Taylor Swift, and special events, you know, like Andre 3000's release day activation. AMC has re-released the Talking Heads film and more classic concert films. Music at the movies is catching on, and more music films are being made. Theater experiences are a good home to watch the magic.
Yes. God, I love doing that too. And he goes on to say, Live Nation soars to new heights. The live business is booming and Live Nation knows how to operationalize that. The stock is looking great, but what's next? The ticket industry needs disruption and they are still in danger of monopoly legislation with Ticketmaster. Watch out for Live Nation to eat their own lunch and spin off Ticketmaster while the getting is good. Oh, that's an interesting
His next point is country music is on the rise. Beyonce's Cowboy Carter dropped last week and already the biggest album of the year. The rollout has been fantastic. And although they're using the slogan, it's not a country album, it's a Beyonce album. What's happening is genre bending and door opening for a lot of, you know, closet country fans. 10 years ago, this would have sounded crazy to me, but country is becoming the soundtrack to our nation.
Right. So he goes, also mentions Life After Hip Hop 50. Hip hop had an awesome year in 2023 with its 50th anniversary. But now it's time for my favorite genre to think through where it goes next. This is definitely a transition year into a growth era for hip hop. Ownership is the key theme, and it's great to see the sound's evolution while the sport stays competitive.
Right.
50th anniversary. My God.
I know. Can you believe it?
I believe it.
Yeah. The next one is really, really important, and that is AI is the hottest topic in music. Yes, it is. There's so much opportunity in AI in 2024. This is a dominant topic that will continue to iterate. The main trend is that you have to be using it. And then the other part is crypto is out of control. What's happening with the crypto market, thanks to, you know, the ETFs, Bitcoin's halving, and the explosion of meme coins, is giving life to a new era of crypto, according to Jesse. Music hasn't really gotten in the action yet, and Web3 remains a bit of a dirty word. I expect it to be back in vogue sooner than later. We'll see.
Well, you mentioned super serving the super fan as the major DSPs continue to oversaturate. Artist-driven subscriptions are raising their hands. Not all fans are created equal. From the Weverse to Volt, this is a huge growth area that the industry is focused on. This effort could create a paradigm-shifting business. The answer might be right in front of our faces, though. Goldman Sachs estimates that a full monetization of the music superfan market could increase the music industry's revenue by approximately $4 billion based on, while perhaps aggressive, estimates that 20% of streaming subs are super fans with a much deeper appetite for spending on their favorite artists.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you and I covered some research from Russ Krupnik from Music Watch on super fans. And if you haven't read that, Google that, because he's got sort of a, you know, maybe an alternative take on that. But the last one is that music industry's piece of the creator economy. Another big theme in the 2020s has been the creator economy. Artists are learning to leverage their platforms to launch products and brands and create content with brands in mind. Brand partnerships are on the rise. In the music business and marketing, the trends are our friends. Being on the pulse of the culture is important, and being able to make crazy ideas come to life is a calling card. The intersection of music and literally anything else works. So great piece by Jesse Kirschbaum. Really enjoy his work. Check out Beats and Bytes, and Bytes is B-Y-T-E-S. Beats and Bytes, and this was his Q1 2024 music trend report. Very well done.
Yes. hard to believe we're already through Q1. My goodness, time flies when you're having fun. And on that note, Jay, we got to wrap up the show. If you enjoy the show, Jay and I would really appreciate it if you just tell one friend. That would be really cool. And we, of course, want to thank our sponsors, Banzoogle, Hypebot, Bands in Town, and the Music Business Association. So on behalf of my good friend, Jay Gilbert, we both say thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on the Your Morning Coffee Podcast.
You've been listening to Your Morning Coffee, the weekly music news program for the new music business. Join Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart next time for the digital music news you need to know.